this meeting to order. My plan is to, after I read my special note to the public, that I will take a roll call of who's here from the Board of Health. Okay, so special note to the public. Due to recommendations to limit gatherings to no more than 10 people in order to help slow the spread of the COVID-19 virus, public access to the meeting will be provided via conference call to listen and participate in the meeting. Members of the public who would like to call in, they can dial 918-221-0224 and enter 222-5929-465 and then pound. We ask that you mute your phone if possible. Audio recordings of all board meetings will be posted on our website, www.storycountyiowa.gov, after the meeting is concluded. You may access these recordings at any time by clicking on the meetings and agendas button on the home page. Okay, so I'd like to call to order, and I'd like our Board of Health members to who are on the line to identify themselves. I'm John Passion.
Louisa Tabatabai.
Okay.
John Kluge.
Okay.
Molly Lee.
Thank you. Is Mark Speck present? How about Lisa Heddens?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so that's our group, okay? I'd like to get started, please. First of all is approval of the agenda. Hope everyone had a chance to see the agenda. It's kind of lengthy, but we'll get through it. I need a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Wait, is that Mark in there?
Yeah, I'm here. Mark's here.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so for the minutes, who moved to approve?
I did, but Mark did too, so put one of us down in a second.
Okay, John Kluge moved for approval, and Mark Speck seconded.
I'll second.
Okay. Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor, say aye. Louisa?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Molly?
Aye.
Mark?
Aye.
And the agenda is approved. Now we have approval of the minutes. You all had a copy of the minutes sent to you. Are there any questions about the minutes? Any additions or subtractions from it? Hearing none, I need a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Okay, John Kluge, second.
Second, Louisa.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, so I need a vote. Louisa.
Aye.
John Kluge.
Aye.
Molly Lee.
Aye.
Mark.
Aye.
And John Passion. Aye. Consent agenda. All items listed under the consent agenda will be enacted by one motion. There will be no separate discussion of these items unless a request is made prior to the time the board votes on the motion. And so you see the consent agenda in front of you. I need a motion to approve.
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
All right, so Mark Speck moved and John Kluge second. Any discussion? Okay. So we'll take a vote. Louisa?
Aye.
John Kluge?
Aye.
Molly?
Aye.
Mark?
Aye.
John Passion, aye. Public forum. This is the time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health. Is there anyone that would like to discuss an issue with the Board of Health that's not on our agenda?
Nope.
Yeah. Hello. This is Laura Olson. This is Laura Olson.
Hello, Boris.
Okay. There's nothing like me sending an email to Dr. Passion and then copying Lisa in and a couple other people at the 25th hour, something like that, okay? So just want to let you know that I did send an email to Dr. Passion requesting that the Story County Board of Health, you're going to probably have to do this in a separate special meeting. Require the individuals to wear facial coverings while in the common use areas of Story County buildings, while we have this pandemic going on, would be a reasonable public health measure to mitigate transmission of the disease. And the request is coming to you because there's discussion now going on about when the buildings, the Story County buildings, will open up to the public. In addition, there is a group associated with the Story County Courthouse group that we're trying to take a look at what types of mitigation might be needed to go ahead and allow the courts to open on July 13th for non-jury trials. So, as there was a discussion this morning among that courthouse group, that also I already had indicated to my fellow supervisors that I would be bringing a motion forward to the Board of Supervisors at some point. I'm hoping to shoot for June 16th for us to talk about requiring facial coverings in the common areas of the county. And based upon some initial information that came down from IFAC and their general counsel, it is in fact probably allowable for counties to require the public to wear facial coverings. And then I'll be sending some requests, some information for requests from our county attorney. They said in general, they believe that this is covered under our broad powers, but I want to ask some very specific questions of our legal counsel also. And once again, this would be in preparation for us taking a look at reopening the county buildings to the public, probably around July 1, and the courts themselves wanting to start getting back to business, at least non-jury trials, by July 13th. So the letter has been sent to Dr. Passion. I'm sure he will distribute it to all of you and the rest of the board. Okay, thank you. It was just a, you know, I'm sorry. In a perfect world, everything would have aligned for discussions to have occurred, so I could put this on your agenda. But instead, I need to send it and then maybe ask if you could look at maybe doing a special meeting on that in the next couple weeks. That's it for me.
Okay, Laura, thank you. Can I ask you just a question? At what, when would you like it? It sounds like you're going to be going in front of the Board of Supervisors June 16th. So if we did have a special meeting, it should be before that.
Yes. Now, June 16th is my target date, and part of that target date is based on the fact that, you know, we want to give people time, we want to make signs, et cetera, if we would do that, okay, the board. So, yes, so I'd actually be hoping that you would be able to have maybe a meeting the weekend before the 16th, so might be, say, by June 12th.
Okay.
That's a Friday. I'm counting on my fingers.
Okay. I don't think this is going out of order or anything, but does any of the Board of Health members have any problems with us calling a special meeting?
No.
Okay. Would it be best if we did it in the evening, like we've done in the past?
Probably.
Yes, I think that's best.
Okay. So let me get with Stephanie over the next few days, and we'll get an agenda out and get things going, okay?
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and you guys have a wonderful meeting, all right?
Yes. Thanks.
Bye.
And then our next motion will be be to drop the public forum from our agendas from here on out. It's a joke. Okay. Okay. All right. So next on the agenda is mental health first aid presentation by Todd Anderson.
Hey, I thought that bit was funny. Anyway.
No one did.
I appreciate it. Yeah, it's more difficult over the phone, I think. So. But I want to thank all of you for giving me some time here, but I have attended previous meetings with mental health first aid trainings with flyers. I am from Community and Family Resources, Prevention Specialist Todd Anderson. I do provide these meetings now before our COVID-19 pandemic hit. The National Council for Behavioral Health and Mental Health First Aid USA was going to create a blended training in which 2 hours would be a self-paced, individualized training online. So individual participants would go and understand signs, symptoms of mental health disorders, risk factors, protective factors. And then the idea was to move into a four-hour face-to-face setting, in which we would role play scenarios and look at ways on how to better engage, reach out, refer people to the proper health services. That's still going to happen a little bit down the road, but since this pandemic has hit, the National Council has actually started creating a fully virtual training option, which I have created on a flyer, and hopefully that's all members there. If not, I certainly can send it again. But we're cutting down the 8-hour traditional face-to-face trainings down to 6-hour virtual trainings or even 6-hour blended trainings in which if there were face-to-face interaction, it would only be 4 hours. Otherwise, that 4 hours can be converted to a virtual format. So not only are we lessening the time it takes to get trained, but we're also introducing a few new platforms to allow people better access to these trainings in order to get certified or get credentialed to be mental health first aiders. So I just wanted to bring that attention to Story County, specifically the virtual training mode, which will be introduced and rolled out hopefully by July 2020. So if there is any interest, as long as there are anywhere from 5 to 30 people, I can take custom dates, custom requests for scheduling trainings. Otherwise, once we kind of emerge from this COVID-19, hopefully sooner than later, I will probably start pushing face-to-face trainings insofar as the number of people that the CDC regulates is allowable. So I just wanted to give that update. So I appreciate your attention to this. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions for Todd?
This is Lisa. I just have a quick question for him.
Yeah.
Todd, thanks for the information. I think this is great what you're doing. So I see on the flyer it shows you complete a 2-hour self-paced class and then participate in the 4-hour instruction-led class. So
yes.
if somebody wants to take that, would they then like register with you first so they have a certain amount of time to complete the 2-hour first before taking the 4-hour class?
Yes. So registration would happen initially, and then after registration, participants will be able to take a 2-hour class. And the dates will be kind of staggered. So generally, I would give about a week. If I need to give a little bit longer for those 2 hours, they certainly can. But there will be a date to register, and then there will be a date to complete that 2-hour self-paced online class before participants can take the 4-hour class. And I will have a list of everybody who has either successfully passed the 2 hours or who hasn't successfully passed it, but that's kind of their ticket to get to the 4-hour training as well. But yeah, it's a good question.
Sure. Great. Thank you for that clarification.
Okay. Not a problem.
Okay. All right. Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
So, Tom, thank you very much for the information. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it. You all have a good day.
Thank you. Okay, so next item. Discussion and consideration of guidance from the Board of Health for mitigating COVID-19 risk when the Story County Fair opens. Okay. We have, we got several documents from the Story County Fair Association and also the some stuff from the ISU Extension. We also got some information from the, I think it was the, the ISU Extension that talked about kind of a complex, thing you sent us. And I kind of have to re-pull it up on my computer and stuff, but it looked, you know, really quite complete. So I guess, well, I'm going to open up the conversations to Jess and Michelle, as well as Wade.
Wade was not able to join us this afternoon. He is failing hay, so I'm sure he'd rather be here. But
I don't know.
I can start. I can start if that's okay. My name is Michelle Gibson. I'm the Fair Operations Manager with the Story County Fair. And the document that I sent you is just kind of an outline of what the Fair Board is thinking the fair should look like this year. This is not set in stone. We still need to get together with Extension and FFA advisors and all collaborate to come up with one plan that works best for the families and 4-H'ers and FFA members of Story County. But as far as the fair side goes, we have decided on a couple things that are pretty big. We will not be open to the public this year. So it is just going to be open to 4-H'ers and their immediate family. We're going to, and you can see in the document we sent, but we're going to recommend that everybody wears masks. We will have signage on the fairground just explaining what precautionary measures people who are there should take. We'll have hand sanitizing stations, and we have added one extra day to the fair to hopefully stretch out the livestock shows. So we're just not having a lot of people there all at the same time. You know, with the state kind of relaxing their guidelines a little bit on gatherings, we're hoping to have that a traditional livestock show in the show ring. Hopefully that will come to be. That's our intent. And as far as static exhibits, which would be like your clothing, woodworking, photography, we are very comfortable following what Story County Extension has already presented, which would basically be the kids will be dropping off their exhibits. They won't have conference judging. You know, the judges will judge the exhibits while maintaining social distancing, and then they'll schedule a time, excuse me, to pick up those exhibits. So that's kind of where we're at. And like I said, hopefully by next Monday, or not next Monday, the 15th is when we hope to finalize all of our plans with Story County Extension and the FFA advisors.
Okay. Michelle, can I, this is John Passion, can I ask you a couple of questions?
Yes.
First of all, I read through all the information you sent us. It sounded good. Will you be doing any health screenings at all on the exhibitors as well as the judges?
Right. We have not discussed that. That is definitely a possibility. And would you basically want us to take temperatures and maybe ask a few questions?
Yeah.
Is that what you're thinking? Okay.
I think that would be a good idea. You know, there's a lot of...
Yeah, I recommend that. Yep.
Yeah. And the other thing is that there is, you know, there's a lot of talk about people who could spread this and not have symptoms, but virtually everybody who looks at this with a clear head thinks that that's probably less of a risk. You're still at the greatest risk of spreading COVID-19 when you're sick with it.
Sure.
The other thing I really want to emphasize is the two things that clearly show decrease the risk of contracting COVID-19 besides the social distancing is a mask and good hand hygiene. I mean, much better than just about anything else out there. And so as long as you kind of emphasize that and the social distancing as much as you can, and if you screen beforehand, man, I think you've got it.
Okay. Wonderful. I appreciate that feedback.
Okay. All right. Does anyone else on the Board of Health have anything to say on this?
Michelle, this
happens,
is Lisa. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
What happens if they cancel the state fair?
That was my question, John.
You know, honestly, we haven't really talked about that. I think we would, you know, if you are comfortable with the measures we have set in place and, you know, the state of Iowa at that point in time has not seen a dramatic increase in cases, I think we would probably try to, like, we would try to have it like we have it set out. But, you know, if the climate of the state at that point is, you know, not good, if we have increased cases, if there's, you know, hot spots in the county, then we would definitely think about having to cancel. That would be our opinion on that.
This is Lisa. I have another question as well.
Sure.
I mean, John took my first question.
No, go ahead.
So I'm looking at your the spreadsheet that came up from Extension, and I'm just wondering, is that all that information? Because it's the same as what we, I believe it's the same as what we had sent to us at the last meeting, although a little late, we didn't have time to review it as clearly. Have there been specific changes on this in relation to what you had just said about, you know, folks are going to be dropping off their exhibits, not staying there? I am just seeking for further clarification on that.
Sure. And Jeff can jump in too on this. We have not met together to go over, you know, each other's plans yet. They were coming at their plans based on, I think, guidance from Iowa State Extension. And so I don't know if they've made any changes since the last time we met. We haven't seen that document, but I don't know, that Jeff, you know, jump on in there. We're hoping just that we can combine both of these plans into one, is our hope. We want to work with them to try and make the best fare possible for the kids and the safest.
Right, and this is Jess Soderstrom from ISU Extension, so I am the one that created that long spreadsheet, which I realize is quite detailed, so thank you all for reviewing that. I would agree with what Michelle said. We hope that we see that the ability to combine the Story County Extension and Outreach and the Story County Care Association plans, as we are separate entities. There will definitely be some more details that we need to fill in together, especially based on guidance that the Extension Office receives from Iowa State and the Iowa 4-H program. That will kind of decide the 4-H participation in the Story County Fair. And like Michelle said, we just haven't had the chance to all sit down together and go through things. But as for the spreadsheet that you received, there have been no changes made since we have spoke to the Board of Health at that last meeting. And then we realized that we've been reviewing it, but we haven't made any official changes to that draft yet.
Okay, I appreciate that information. For me, I'm just looking at the number of people, and I know you've put down, you know, pretty well 3 hours or 5 hours, you know, or if it's through the course of a day, so I appreciate that. I guess I'm just still being very cognizant about just the number of people that are participating or in a room, close quarters, potential close quarters at one time.
Right. So the numbers that you see were based off of the 2019 exhibits or exhibitors that entered. So in the case of our static exhibit judging, I did say 29 people would be present over the course of one day, and that would be spread into three different locations to really keep people in a room under 10 people. In the past, you know, we couldn't expect up to 300 exhibitors, plus our judges and plus our staff and volunteers, but we're really working to reduce those numbers.
Great, thank you.
Okay, anyone else that has anything to say or add from the Board of Health?
This is Molly, and all I wanted to say is thank you to all of you guys, to Jeff and Michelle and everybody for putting this together. I think it's important to have this experience still for our youth, and so appreciate all the ways that you're trying to make it safe for them and for our community.
Thank you. We feel the exact same way. So, yeah, we just definitely want to try and give the kids, you know, the fair experience in just crazy times. So we appreciate that.
Yes, thank you, Molly.
All right. Any other comments? So do we, at this point, do we need a motion to approve this plan for the Story County Fair if it opens? Or is this an information thing?
John, I would think it's still pretty fluid.
Okay.
I'd hate to make a motion and say they've got to stick to just that, because I would say it's subject to change depending on the situation.
Okay, and you know, they didn't really ask us for approval necessarily. They're just asking for our advice. So this could be like an information item?
Well, it says on your agenda, discussion and consideration.
Welcome to the meeting. Please. You will now be placed into the meeting.
We approve of the current plan with the suggestions that were made by the Board of Health, and the only thing that we really made was the temperature monitoring of everyone that came in. And that could be, you know, as it currently stands. Would that be an appropriate motion? I don't want to do anything, you know, inappropriate here.
Right, and this is Lisa. I think you can do whichever for your motion. I'm just saying that if you decide to make it just an information item, make sure that you're clear that this was only an information item.
Let me ask you. I understand. But we gave advice?
Dr. Passion, this is Stephanie. I was just thinking that probably since we haven't checked with Ethan, that you would need to make it very clear that it was only advice, so there was no liability issues for the Board of Health.
Okay.
Good comment, Stephanie.
Okay. So then we're done. We don't need a motion for this, right?
I think that's still up to you. If you do make a motion, you should just be very clear that it's only for advice. But that's up to you.
Yeah, I think unless anyone else has any better ideas, I would suggest that we just move on to the next item.
I think that's good.
Okay. All right. Okay, sounds good, because we're going to be doing the same thing on this next two items. Okay?
Three.
Discussion and consideration of Iowa Trail Run Series. And Pasha Korsakoff, are you here?
Yes, Dr. Pasha, I'm here.
Very good. So all those on the Board of Health, you got that information about the Iowa Trail Run. Do you have any... Would you like to talk or anything, or say a little anything for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So this hopefully is the third year that we're doing the event at McFarland Park, and it's always been one of our more popular ones. It's generally been run as an evening race, which is why it's called Midsummer Night's Run. And, you know, we've done a bonfire and things like that. Obviously, for this year, with our current public health situation, we're modifying it to still be able to hold the event and still allow people the chance to get out and run in the woods, but we want to, you know, be cognizant of the fact that we don't want to be gathering that many people. So we've come up with what we hope is the right plan to still hold the event in a modified fashion using a wave system to only have 50 people running at any given 2-hour interval. And so hopefully one, reduce the stress on park use earlier in the day and also not have any potential clustering or congregation of runners. We'll basically be doing everything with as few contact points as possible. Normally, you know, we have things for sale and pre-race events, post-race photos, awards, bonfire, things like that. That's all on pause for the time being. The plan would be to have people come to McFarland in their designated way. They would get their pre-made packet for the event, stitching their, you know, the bib number and their t-shirt and things like that. They would warm up on their own or just, you know, stay in their cars, whatever they need to do. And then once they got closer to the start of their wave, and the waves would be 2, 4, 6, and 8 p.m., once we got closer to those points, they would all congregate in that pretty large area, for those of you that have been to McFarland, around the bonfire ring. And obviously 50 people can spread out pretty easily there with more than 6 feet distance, I think, without even thinking about it. And we'll obviously have our audio system going to keep reminding people. And then we'll send people off in groups of 10 in our start shoot. That will, each person will be separated by 8 feet. Each person will go 10 seconds apart in a time trial fashion. Once we get that group of 10 off onto the course, we'll take 1 minute, and then we'll during that minute, we'll load the next 10 in and keep going until we get all 6 or so people onto the course. So ideally, we really won't have any backup or any overlap because we're only doing one lap of the course, so we really shouldn't have any extra passing. We're asking people to self-seed based on their speed. So, you know, fast people up front, slow people towards the back. And we've also eliminated the water station as well, just again as another contact point that for a shorter 5K distance, we feel we can get away with. Once people finish, we're going to have pre-made post-race kind of snack bags for them with water, banana, and a granola bar. And we'll send them on their way, give them 5 minutes to cool down and ask them to make room for the next wave. Hopefully it'll be a relatively smooth process since we, you know, we won't have that many people going at any given time, we'll be able to crank it through pretty easily. You know, in speaking with sort of kind of conservation and also with the Department of Health, they recommended that we chat with the board here, and so we're open to any and all suggestions that you guys have based on that plan.
Well, Pasha, this is John Passion talking. I read through that plan. It looks, actually, to be quite honest, it looks really good. Are you going to do any temperature screenings of the runners?
No, we hadn't planned to. Only one, because to be perfectly frank, I thought about that and I've had a heck of a time trying to find a thermometer. But also we could, you know, some of the race, and especially the parts that we're eliminating, depend quite a bit on volunteers and potentially an extra staff person or two. And so we're basically just trying to make it so it's as much of a standalone event where, you know, really the only people that we need are those that are going to be building out the actual event before anybody shows up. And then the, you know, the handful for the start, finish, and packet pickup. So that's part of the reason why I avoided that. And generally with a running event, the assumption is that if you don't feel well, most people are not going to come to a race, especially if it's not we really enjoy our events and we take pride in them, but this is not the Boston Marathon. Nobody is going to risk themselves in any way to run a 5K at McFarland Park. So we're sort of, reminding all of our runners with messaging, hey, if you don't feel well, if you have come into contact with somebody that doesn't feel well, we're asking them to stay home, and, we're happy to defer your registration to one of our other events in the series.
I see your point. I see your problem. You bring up really, really good points, especially about runners who are healthy. But I will tell you, we ask our patients to do the same thing. We still check the temperature before they come. I know the difficulty involved with temperature monitoring. I don't think it's kill the event if you can't, but I would really try real hard to get a volunteer or two with a mask, maybe even call McFarland Clinic to see if there's a nurse or two that would like to be the person who does this, kind of as a volunteer.
Sure.
And, I guess you could, it's mostly the temperature guideline, purely because with my last discussion, again, there are people who can pass this without showing symptoms, but almost everyone feels that that's a very low probability, and your greatest probability is when you're sick with a fever. And so, someone could be just getting sick. I think it'd be a nice a little precaution. We have our Kelly Hartwig, I think is her name, at McFarland Clinic. And also there may even be, you may want to even contact Steve Sullivan at Mary Greeley Medical Center to see if he could connect you with someone who could help you with volunteering. Have a nurse or two, or maybe even a physician who likes to do this kind of stuff, volunteer.
Okay, that sounds good. I will.
Kelly Hartwig is our ID nurse. She's our ID nurse. Okay?
Got it.
Okay?
This is Louisa Tabatabai. I like that suggestion, John, to have the group contact a nurse or a physician. Be great. I have another question. At the bottom, there is a statement, Pasha, that says the hope is we won't have any more than 50 people distributed throughout the park at any given time. In the past, how many people took part in the 5K run?
We've had two distances, both 5K and 10K, so that obviously attracted some more people. In the past 2 years, we've averaged about 220 people, 230 roughly.
Okay, so you expect to have 50 people per wave, is that
correct?
Did I understand that correct? Okay.
Correct.
Great.
Yeah, this is Mark Speck. Were you planning on the volunteers wearing masks? I didn't know if I caught that.
Yes, all of our staff and volunteers, whenever they're potentially interacting with participants, they'll all be wearing masks. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, any other comments or questions from the Board of Health? Okay, very good. Okay, well, Pasha, thank you very much. It looks actually, in my opinion, this looks really good to me. Hopefully it'll work out okay. And if you can get some temperature monitoring, I think that would be great.
Okay, we will do our best to make that happen. Thank you for the feedback and for the suggestion.
And not temperature monitoring after the race.
That might be a little bit of
skewed
data.
Yes, that is skewed data. Okay. Okay. All righty. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Passion, this is Russ. And I just wanted to let them know that
We recently purchased some thermometers with part of our grant money, and so we are willing to, we would just have them sign that little contract, and they could borrow a couple of PME thermometers from us if somebody ever needs to do that.
Pasha, did you hear that?
Yes, I did catch that. Thank you very much. That would be great. How could we go about finding that waiver and using those?
Yep. I know you've been in contact with Sherry Lipp. If you'll just contact Sherry, we'll take care of everything for you.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. Good.
Well, thanks, Les. Okay. All right. Okay.
Thank you again.
You're welcome. Thank you. Okay, so we're moving on to the next item. Discussion and consideration of suggestions for Story County schools to prevent COVID-19 infection when school returns this fall. Okay, who wants to take this one? Okay.
This is Molly. I guess it was my idea, so I can take it. The reason why I wanted this to be on the agenda was because I had been contacted by some folks from the Gilbert School District, and they really were just simply wondering if the Story County Board of Health wanted to, or if we felt that we should provide guidance as these schools are coming up with their return to learn plans. So, you saw in your agenda the return to learn guidance from the Iowa Department of Education and some CDC guidance. So I guess that's kind of all I wanted to have the board think about and discuss and maybe make a decision on if we wanted to provide any guidance back to our school districts other than what they are already having to do for the Board of Education and if so, what does that look like?
Okay. This is John Passion. This is a big subject. I'll be quite frank. And there's been a lot of things written about this. One of the interesting things are the countries that have got COVID-19 under control have not canceled schools. You know, it seems like that's just something that this country did. The risk of the data is beginning to show that the risk of children passing it on to other children is pretty low, that the biggest risk for a child to get COVID-19 is when they're exposed to a family member, a parent who has it, as opposed to in daycare or schools. I've seen these things written and these suggestions written, like trying to cut down class size to no more than 10, if that's going to even be feasible, everybody wearing a mask, things like temperature screening on the kids come in the morning and they get their temperature taken. Lunches need to be spaced out so there's not like 150 kids in this one big auditorium eating lunch, that they have to go in waves, similar to the Iowa Trail Run series. They have to go in waves to eat lunch, things like that. And I guess I kind of don't, you know, like, is there somebody who wants to talk to us about this or see what they have? Or, I mean, you know, I guess I kind of wonder what they want from us at this point, Molly. Have they kind of said anything? Or?
Yeah, to my knowledge, they haven't. I think they were just presenting us an opportunity to be involved if we wanted to. And my observation, I guess, looking at the guidance from the Department of Education would be, the Department of Education already requires schools to submit this return to learn plan, and if you look at it, it kind of is in three different pieces. So they have to, the schools have to put together a continuous learning plan, and that's required and required to be approved by the Department of Education. And then they also have hybrid and on-site plans that the schools may put together. So again, I don't know if if we want to, and I'm not necessarily advocating either way, I just think that the school districts wanted us to consider if and how much we wanted to be involved. And if we do want to be involved, that might be one way we could, is by kind of looking at those plans that the schools put together, if they choose to put together a hybrid or on-site plan, because the Department of Education isn't approving those specifically.
That might
look kind of like what we're doing here for the race or for the fair. It would obviously be a lot more in depth, but and again, we don't have to. Just wanted the opportunity to be considered, I think.
Okay. Well, why don't you could you do us a favor, Molly? Could you just recontact the Gilbert Schools, the person who contacted you, and kind of try to get a little bit more specific about what they want for us? Because, you know, I can make a list of things that I've read that they would recommend, and we could give them that advice. I read those things from the state about the continuous learning, and I didn't get a lot of information about how to prevent COVID-19 in those things you sent us.
Mm-hmm.
I just got a sense that this is what the schools are going to have to do to make sure that the kids learn this fall, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so what we need to do is, if we want to get involved, we need to say, well, these are ways that you can do this. These are things, if they're coming into the building, this is what they should do. Everyone should wear a mask. Everyone has to be screened when they come in. You have to make sure that excuses to stay home if they're not feeling good are allowed really easily. Make sure that their class sizes are smaller if possible, or as small as possible. Decrease the changes in classes. Instead of kids going from one class to another, have the teachers go from one class to another. It would decrease exposures of the children. Things like that. But that's a big thing.
Yep. Sure, I can certainly reach out to Gilbert and try to get some more information from those people. Would that be something we would be interested in having someone maybe present at the next meeting or at our special meeting that's coming up?
You know, that might not be a bad idea. I think that
okay.
I would kind of be in favor of that.
And then do we want to reach out to other school districts in our county too? Or just start with Gilbert since they contacted us?
I would just start with Gilbert right now. And then if we can figure out a good plan, like, let's just say there's only going to be one Story County Fair, but if someone else wants to do a 5K run, I think we could use the template that they did for the Iowa Trail Run Series, you know, and we could just say, well, this is what they did. And if we can help Gilbert Schools figure out a plan, we could say to them, this is what, you could do it also. But the problems with the Gilbert School District is going to be a heck of a lot different than the Ames School District. And plus, I am positively sure that the education departments in each of those districts have guidelines and people that they have to get stuff approved for, more so than someone who's running a county fair. See what I'm trying to say?
Yep, got it. Sounds good.
All right. But I think it'd be a good idea to kind of see how we can help and have them talk with them directly. Okay? All right.
Yep.
Could we check what our liability if we do this is? Is that we're getting in with the school district?
It's a very good question.
I think we could certainly ask Ethan to be at the next meeting, or whatever meeting you have this on the agenda.
Yeah, because I guess the thing is, the way that I look at this is, and Ethan may disagree with this, but we can get into problems in the Board of Health if we overstep our authority and do things. But if we're just giving guidance, if we're just saying, this is what we think you should do, they decide to do it or they don't do it, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would like to give anybody any help we can, but I don't want to get us in doing that, overstepping our authority or somebody interpreting that.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Anything else at all? Molly, got anything else for us?
Nope, that's it for me. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so next one. Discussion and consideration of septic tank manufacturers being required to cure tanks for a given amount of time and adding a coating of required plastic tanks. Or a coating or required plastic tanks. Okay, Mark.
Yeah, this came up here recently when we were doing a septic tank inspection for a transfer house out here in North of Ames, and that tank, I think it was about 13 years old was all, and upon the inspection by the septic tank cleaning guy, the septic tank failed due to the top part of the dividing wall. It had been eaten all the way across. The methane gas and the acidic part of the tank there, just eating away at the top dividing section, and also on the outlet of the tank, it was eaten out. And then he went on to tell me about a couple other tanks that he's had problems with over by Cameron School, over there in that subdivision there east of Cameron Pines and on close to the Boone County line there. There's a couple of houses that were done only like 3 or 4 years ago, and they're having the same problem, and those are relatively new tanks. You know, 3 or 5 years, you don't expect a tank to go bad.
Well,
so it's just kind of it seems pretty bad when you got to replace a tank when it's only 3 or 5 years old. And I know that we always used to have tar on the inside of these tanks. They were always coated at the water line above about 6 inches and about a foot down all the way around at that water line. And for some reason, they've quit doing that. And I've talked to an engineer about this, and I kind of think a lot of these tanks, the reason I think they wanted to get rid of the tar was, number one, they just didn't want to do it and hassle with it. And the other reason is, in order to put that tar on those tanks, the tanks need to cure for probably a minimum of probably 7 days for that concrete to not be green. Because if you put the tar on there when they're green, the tar doesn't stick very well. So in order to do a proper job, the tanks have to sit and cure, which also makes them stronger. And you know, then you can put the tar on. But I just think we ought to look into this a little bit and get some recommendations and see what's going on. I don't think it's right for these people to have to be changing their tanks out 3 and 5 years down the road. I don't think that's acceptable myself. So whatever's going on, I think we need to maybe do a little more study and research on this and find out what is acceptable and what they can do to stop this from eating these tanks up.
Margaret, are you here?
What?
Is Margaret here?
Yes, I'm here.
So what do you think, Margaret? I mean, you've heard some of this as well, I know.
Mm-hmm.
If we weren't on this, you know, this phone thing when we get together, we could get the septic tank cleaning guy, and I can get Steve Jones, an engineer. Oh, I wish we could be talking in person rather than on the phone on something like this. But go ahead, Margaret. What do you think?
Well, I know that you and I have talked about this at length before, and your suggestion was maybe to have something written into our code requiring coating for the septic tank. And that's a little bit it would be hard to do, because if a tank is already delivered without a coating, I don't know, you know, returning it and putting everything on, putting the job on hold would be quite a hardship. I think that this is a type of requirement that's better statewide, not county by county. So that's one point. Another point is, I was of the understanding that a contractor could request and pay extra, of course, for a coating. Is that correct, Mark, or not?
I can't answer that. I don't know if they will do it or not, but in order to do it properly, the tank has to have set for a minimum of 7 days, according to Steve Jones, and up to, you know, concrete doesn't completely get cured out for, I think, 14 or 23 days. And I think these guys are getting behind, and they're sending, you know, they take these tanks out of the form, and then, man, 2 days later, they're out the door or less. We had a couple years ago, they came out so green that the next day, the whole corners blew out, just being filled with water, and they were even backfilled. And they broke out the corners because they were so green. So I know the tanks are going out not completely cured. They're not giving them 7 days, just a minimum.
Wouldn't you avoid purchasing a tank from that same manufacturer the next time if they were not curing them properly? And if it affects their sales, they would most probably correct that on their own.
Plastic tanks. I got three tanks to put in here in the next month, and I'm going to put plastic tanks in.
We don't recommend that. We don't recommend that.
And I know, but it's
you don't bad, Mark. You don't recommend plastic tanks?
Correct.
Why not?
And it's not just me. It's all the conferences that you go to, the engineers, because they do not hold their shape. They have gotten way better over the years, you know, with reinforcements and corrugated siding, this and that. But like when they pump them out, they have a tendency to get misshaped, and then the riser top doesn't fit right, and, you know, so it kind of goes south from there. On the other hand, plastic tanks, they're really good about corrosion. They don't corrode like the concrete ones do. And they certainly have their place in the market in that, you know, replacement systems. If you have to get a tank behind the house, sometimes you just can't get the truck and the crane back there. So you go with plastic, and that is just fine. But for the most part, we ask people to consider using concrete just because they're heavier. They're not as buoyant as plastic, and they hold their shape better.
Yeah, Marty, it's like anything. It's done properly. There's really not a problem. And the three that I got to put in are behind houses where we can't hardly get a truck back there anyway. So that's why we're doing it. But if you back some property, like they say, and they do make, the ones we use are heavy duty. They make a heavy duty plastic tank. And that's what we use.
No, I'm just saying with the engineers, and you know, we go to these conferences every year, and I'm still hearing that the concrete is recommended over plastic.
Well, Steve Jones doesn't. He thinks they're fine if they're put in properly and you backfill like you're supposed to. There's really not a thing wrong with them.
Okay. I can ask IOWWA, you know, the Association for Septic Systems, to possibly do a study or see what's available out there
opinion, something like that. We could maybe get something together on that, if that would be helpful.
Well, I don't know, but I know having to replace a tank in 3 to 5 years, that's really not acceptable. It's pretty expensive. It's expensive to change these tanks out, and the customers aren't very happy about it.
I haven't seen a lot in going back 3 to 5 years. That sounds pretty extreme.
Well, John's septic tank's got two of them right now over there west of me that
both of them are failing.
John's septic tank.
John, used to be Earl's Gray.
Oh, Earl, yeah.
He's got two of them just west of where I live. They're going back nearly. One's 5 years and one's 3 years.
Boy, that's really bad.
Yeah, I know.
I have a question to Mark and Margaret. Aren't there any standard manufacturing specifications for septic tanks that are required?
Well, there are.
That's the problem. There's nobody to keep. I mean, you can't have an inspector there. You'd have to put a date and time on them, and when they pulled out of the form, and then an inspector would have to come by, and then, 7 days later say, okay, this one's good. You can send it out. I don't know how you monitor that.
See, so what the way that I look at all this is that we have, is that what you're asking for, Mark, is do we make a regulation that the septic tanks that are concrete be coated appropriately somehow? And that's kind of, I don't know, if no other county does that, I don't know if that is kind of something we should do. I mean, Margaret, am I reading these discussions correctly? Am I listening to these correctly?
That I agree with you. I think it has to come from the state, not from individual counties. Not that I've done a lot of research, but I do not know of any other counties that require coating on the tanks.
Could you do us a favor and maybe give us a report at our next meeting? Could you connect with your people in Des Moines and see if they're running into the same problem? See if there's things that they, and you may find that, yeah, we're actually suggesting that counties make this regulation or something like that, and give us a little bit more guidance.
Sure.
Margaret, they used to be required to be coded. I'm not sure why we got away from it, other than we just got lazy, is my guess on that.
Well,
I mean, it never hurt. It doesn't hurt to have that coding in there. So, and we used to have it on all tanks back 15, 20 years ago. They all were coated, as you well know. And they did that for a reason. And some of these old tanks are lasting longer than the new ones.
Yeah, so, the National Precast Concrete Association, they do not recommend it. I mean, they don't say don't do it, but they don't recommend it. Then they also say if you do it, you have to make sure you do it right. Otherwise, if it slumps off into the tank, then it could land up out in the lateral, and that would be a problem
right.
That way.
No, I understand, but in order to do it right, they have to let the tanks cure before they put it on.
You're right.
And that's why they don't want to do it, because they don't want to have to wait 7 days to do it, because they'd have to have more tanks sitting and waiting in line to go out.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So right. Anyway, I just wanted to bring this up. I think it's a point of a problem that we shouldn't be having to deal with, because it's an expensive thing to change out a septic tank.
I absolutely agree, Mark. Yep.
Yeah. So Margaret, why don't you kind of check some things with your people in Des Moines and see if we get some guidance about how to move with this, okay?
Sure. Okay. Okay, I will do that.
All right, okay. Thanks, Mark, for bringing that up.
Yeah,
okay.
No problem.
Yep. As someone who owns a septic tank at this time, I'm a little bit more interested in this stuff. Okay. Okay. All right. So we're going to move on to agency and department reports, and thanks everyone for being patient with us. Story County Public Health.
Yeah, good afternoon, everybody. This is Les. I will begin with our COVID update. As of right now, today, we have 112 cases. I will tell you that if you look on the IDPH website, they will say that Story County has 118. What we do every week is we contact the Iowa Department of Public Health and do a reconciliation with our cases, just because sometimes there are some things that happen between Des Moines and Ames, and so we want to make sure that we are reaching out to everybody that needs the education that we provide. I did give you some graphs this time. These are ones that I do share weekly with Dr. Passon. The first one really talks about the cases, and you can see we are slowly declining in relationship to actually every week the number of cases that we're seeing. It'll be interesting to see what happens with some of these protests that have been going on around the state, as well as, you know, here in Ames, because there definitely is not any social distancing, although there is, we do see a lot of people in the pictures wearing masks, so that is a plus for that. In addition to that, one of the graphs does show the cities. This just gives you an idea. Ames is always in the lead, but that's what we would expect in relationship to population. North really hasn't had a lot of cases. This was the first week, or last week was the first week actually we've had any cases in Story City. But that gives you an idea that pretty much COVID is being shared around the whole county. The next slide really talks about our recovered cases. So these are the cases that have met the criteria to be discharged, so they're no longer being monitored. And again, those continue to rise. We still have been very fortunate in Story County that we only have had one death during this time. The last slide just shows you the age groups, and I do divide out our age groups compared to the Iowa Department of Public Health. The Iowa Department of Public Health really puts 18 up to 40 in one group. And since this is a college town, we kind of wanted to look at what is the college age student, where are we at with those? And you can see that we do have quite a few, and actually this week, it seems like the cases that Sherry and Teresa are working on this week have been the majority of younger individuals. This pretty much is in tune with what's going on with the entire state. So any questions about any of those graphs?
So you're seeing more youngish people?
Yeah, it seems, you know, actually one of the other things that I was going to talk about is, you know, contact tracing has changed, and one of the projects that I'm working on is with Iowa State University. So this past week, they made some changes to those individuals that we need to look back on. That it begins with now if you've been within 6 feet for 15 minutes. And we go back, if you have symptoms, we go back 48 hours and ask you who you've been in contact with for 15 minutes or greater and less than 6 feet distance. But for those individuals that are asymptomatic but come with a positive test, we have to go back 10 days now. So with that, I've been working with Iowa State because we know as the students come back, with the size of our department, we're not going to be able to keep up with all of the contact tracing. And so actually some of the athletic folks are back in town. And so we are seeing some younger folks that are living in apartments, you know, two or three individuals within those apartments. So I wonder if it's just some of that college population is coming back to Ames. And that could be why. Just a theory, but that's what we're seeing. And we can report, next time we'll report if we see more of those individuals.
So So, Les, your contact tracing is if someone is COVID positive and they're symptomatic, is who they've been around within the last 48 hours.
Correct.
And they have to be less than 6 feet in by them for 15 minutes or greater.
Correct.
And then, so you, and all those people that they, that you see, then do you get them all tested?
Well, that was a new thing that was added as well. We, that is, the state hygienic lab will now pay for those individuals to be tested. So as we provide education, we've always encouraged them to get tested. They could go through Test Iowa, but now they can go through the state hygienic lab and get a test as well.
All right, got it. Thank you. So then you would direct them to just get tested, right?
Yes, that would be correct.
Do you ever check to see if they do get tested?
No, too many people to check.
Teresa, I wanted to add a little to that, and that when we do encourage them to get tested, we don't want to give them a false sense of security if it's negative. Because they still have to self-isolate for 14 days,
yeah.
Okay.
Whether or not their test comes back negative or positive negative, because it can take up to 14 days to get symptoms. You know, some people will go get tested right away and then they get negative. Well, they still have to stay isolated for 14 days, regardless of what the result is.
Okay. Very good.
Okay. The only other thing, a couple other things I just want to make note of, we are waiting guidance from IDCA in relationship to long-term care facilities in testing and how often they're going to test and how the state is doing that, because CDC came out with some guidelines. As of today, we were notified that Bethany Manor now has 3 cases, so this will be considered an outbreak. We will then be in contact with them every day, and this will be reported out on the IDPH website. So I wanted to make you aware of that. And that is our first facility in Story County, so we feel fortunate about that. And it's interesting, the reason how they found these individuals was that the company that manages Bethany has all of their residents tested. And so that's because these individuals aren't necessarily symptomatic. Okay. And that's how they found these 3 individuals to be positive.
And they were all in the memory care unit.
Yes, and they all have dementia.
Yeah.
So we're thinking there's a connection, but that will be our next research project.
Yeah.
Because we've seen that more than once.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. Anyway, the last thing I do want to share with you is last week, I think, and maybe Dr. Patchen, you got this email as well. It came from the Department of Health and Human Services that they're working with AstraZeneca, and they project that they're going to be able to make 300 million doses of vaccine available as early as October. The federal government is supporting that with $1.2 billion. So we are hopeful for that, and with that, we are really starting to look ahead to and see if we're going to need to do some kind of distribution of the vaccine and how we're going to handle that with the community here in Story County. So with that, unless there's other questions, I will go ahead and I'll turn it over to Teresa to let you know what else we've been up to.
I've got a question. Is anybody checking the homes for the handicapped?
We have reached out to organizations like Mosaic, Beloit. So yes, we've tried to reach out. I know there's a couple others. I can't think of the name of them, but we did.
We are.
Yes, we reached out to them as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
What are they, have they been tested, or what are the results? Do we know?
Well, Well, Mosaic has had some individuals, and we have helped them, care for them, provided them hampers and education and gowns and masks so that they can care for those individuals properly. And they have done a very nice job and really kept it contained.
Good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Unless this is Mark Speck, I have a question on that. You were talking about the younger age group. You're seeing more of them. Are they all, is that younger age group, do they tend to have the same, pretty much the same symptoms?
You know what? What we see is such a variety of symptoms that I would say no, not necessarily. It's just such a wide range of symptoms that we see, but not necessarily, although it does seem that they are able to handle it better than the older adults.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I will tell you the rest, well, basically this is Teresa. Most of Sherry and I's time is doing this COVID follow-up and trace back. Now that we're doing all this trace back, we're finding that people are out and about, we're finding that, you know, someone's had a birthday party or had a picnic, and so then it involves a lot of time doing trace back. So that's why Les has been busy with Iowa State, trying to figure out what's going to go on when Iowa State returns. Because even with the young kids that we're seeing, a lot of them are, you know, hanging out with friends, and they're just doing more now that the weather's nice. And so then you end up with a friend of a friend, positive. And so we're getting a lot of interconnections. We'll, you know, link people together that, oh, that person hung out with that person, and now that person's positive. So we're seeing a lot of that. But, and so in addition to that, you know, of course, we're, a lot of questions about businesses opening up and schools and all that stuff, calling and checking on what our recommendations are. You know, Les and I have visited the jail and just, you know, lots of questions how to best practice to open up those facilities. And then we've got three TB clients that we have to deliver medications to on a daily basis. Two of them are now not active because their sputums came back negative. Their medication has worked, but one still is active. So we're busy doing that also with the three TB patients that we deliver meds to every day. But that's about all we do. We don't have really many other diseases. Once in a while, we'll get a Hep B. We've had an E. coli, I think, and a brucellosis, but not too many other diseases. COVID's kind of taken it over.
Okay.
How is the university going to handle Greek Week?
That one I don't know yet. I'm not sure. I think they've got lots of different committees in place that are working on a variety of things, and I'm just very pleased that they're willing to work with us in relationship to helping us trace back with these students that have a positive test.
I've been in contact. Dr. John Fleming has called me a few times because, you know, he works with frat houses. So he's been in touch with us a few times on what our recommendations are when they bring back kids into the frat houses. So,
I mean, typically we got groups of either sorority or fraternities going from house to house to house for 2 weeks before school starts.
I don't think they're going to do that. I'm pretty sure that's what John Fleming had said, that they weren't going to have that. They were changing it anyway. It's not going to be like it was before.
Good.
Les, this is Louisa Tabatabai. Do they do any GPS contact tracking?
We have not looked into that.
I don't know that that's even up and going.
Yeah,
I talked to Nick about it because I think it was a couple weeks ago. Nick said no. It's just been mentioned. There's not been anything more further done with that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, Any other questions or comments from the Board of Health? Okay, well, thank you very much, Story County Public Health. Keep up the good work, okay? And let's pray that our cases continue to decrease like they're doing. Okay, Story County Environmental Health.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Margaret Zane, Story County Environmental Health. I handed out or supplied the written report to the Board of Health, and I'll just talk about a few highlights on that in order to keep the meeting going. Tomorrow, all staff will be returning to the admin building for work, and extra precautions will be taken to prevent the spread of COVID. Septics, pretty much we've been just staying on top of that and business as usual. Now, wells, we have not been doing water testing, and we will wait until we hear from Hygienic Lab and IDPH to learn whether or not we should resume that. We really don't want our staff going into people's houses at this point yet. Tattoos. Two new places, and Kathy went out and did the inspections on those, so they are up and running. For pools, Matt Corey has been in communication with the pool operators, and it's still a real mixed bag as to whether or not they're going to open their pool. CAFOs, we got one application. This is very unusual with the market right now, but June 23rd, we will have a Zoom meeting, public hearing, to discuss the master matrix and have the Board of Supervisors make their recommendations to DNR. Complaints, pretty standard, a couple open discharges that we're looking into and trying to figure out the cause, a couple open burning complaints, and then one fairly big complaint that we got was for abandoned trailers in a mobile home park in Nevada, and I'm hoping that Nevada will take the lead on that and it doesn't turn into another situation where we have a lot of hours dealing with the trailer park. They are on city sewer and city water, so that helped quite a bit with that problem. Let's see. Sunday I went out and did a water monitoring for a snapshot, so we'll be getting reports on that. And let's see, what else is going on here? And then I also included the report on the pumping inspection, the land application for drain tech. I'm just a little concerned we're getting too much concentration of septic out there, so we will be kind of looking into that. I think that's about all I have to report. Any questions that I can entertain?
Hog in the ditch is pretty routine for you, eh, Margaret?
Well,
said just the usual routine, and it's a hog in the ditch, okay?
It was such a gross picture, though. Oh, my goodness. It was not good.
Yeah, anyways, okay. Sometimes I'll tell you about pigs on the beach, but anyway.
Great. I'm looking forward to that. One other thing I wanted to say is everyone get out and vote if you haven't done it yet. Today's the day.
Yeah, that's right. Excellent. Thank you for reminding us about that. Okay. Great. Okay, anything else for Margaret? Okay, thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, Denise Denton, are you here?
I am here. And I'm
okay,
here because everybody wants to go home. Oh, wait a minute, I'm already home. So just to say that, you know, we finished out the school year. Some of that was more interesting than others. I don't know why anyone would ever want to teach class online. I hope to never do it again, but it actually worked out pretty well. And I ended up teaching a lot more classes than I normally would because a lot of our activity classes couldn't meet, of course, and so I was called upon to do extra things about drugs in classes that I wouldn't ordinarily, so the students could get extra credit because we were all scrambling as to how to give tests, which is not easy online.
So I met a lot of students via WebEx that I don't think I might have otherwise. I also taught WebEx classes for the Roland Story 8th grade health students, which I'd never done before. So I got to see the insides of a lot of Roland Story houses that I'd never seen before. This has been such an interesting situation. But the AIM schools declined to do anything online with us. They had a whole different system by which they wanted to get information to their kids. And they decided not to, because of the, they felt a discrepancy in what some kids were able to do online and some kids weren't, because of either their situation at home, bandwidth, and all of that. Didn't want to be unfair to students who would not be able to participate. So that was the end of that. I actually have spent a lot of time talking about what the university is going to do, because I am on the same faculty. I'm the faculty advisor for the Theta Chi House that John Fleming is the alum advisor. So we have been in a lot of Zoom meetings and will continue to do so, trying to sort out how you bring people back into a fraternity whose whole purpose is to be together, fraternal, all of that. And so we are learning a lot about what it's going to be like to do social distancing when everybody lives under one roof. So working out with our exec board that actually is meeting tonight, our students, about the message that we're going to have to send to our members about their responsibilities coming back and what we're going to do. I spoke with Les about what we would need to do if somebody was exposed, if they came down with it, how do we isolate. This is a whole new, you know, bold frontier that we've never gone to before. So that is a work in progress, certainly. Also worked with the university about how to get resources, particularly mental health resources, to students and the staff, because one of the, you know, the bad news about this is that we are humans like other humans, and being isolated is a really awful place to be, particularly if you are involved with substances or you have mental health issues and you are needing to get help or used to getting help. You know, you don't do AA on your own. You are with a group of people. And so trying to get those services to people, and I sent you an article about how when these two things collide, what the challenges are to get people services that they need. You know, usually when people are stressed, if they're in recovery but they're stressed, that is when their brain turns back to what gives them comfort, which is the drug, and you become, you know, the victim of a vicious cycle at that point. So looking at how do you get people, you know, telehealth takes on a whole new meaning at this point. I have friends who are, you know, therapists in private practice and what they are going through to try and reach their students. But I also had coffee with somebody yesterday who's very involved in law enforcement and criminal justice, and her concern about what this is going to do to levels of child abuse, which, you know, most of that reporting comes to the schools. And if those teachers aren't seeing those kids and seeing those symptoms, that's not getting reported. But the increase in domestic violence and potential suicide and human trafficking is a very real threat, and how that is impacted in not a good way. So the only good news I have is I sat in, again, I'm a member of the Story County Opioid Task Force, and we also had a Zoom meeting where it was reported that we do not know of one deployment of Narcan, basically over the last year, by any law enforcement or first responder. That doesn't mean it's not being deployed, but they're not getting the calls for it. So that means people either have it or they're not overdosing. We could go with that. But that's about it. I'm searching. I'm thinking.
It's okay.
But, you know, what I say to my students is, you know, I think this is, you know, only my second pandemic. Somebody reminded me that I lived through the Hong Kong flu as a child. But I believe the pandemics are not unlike family funerals and weddings. They have the potential to bring out the best in people and the worst in people, but they're going to make something bubble. Something's going to bubble to the top, and anyway, I think we're seeing some of that. So.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Denise.
Okay. I have a question, John.
Yes, sir.
How does
how do groups like Al-Anon and AA function with no group meeting?
I don't know. I'm not a member of either one. So I don't really get in on those discussions. I don't know if they have figured out to do, I mean, AA has what they call home meetings, and those are, I mean, that's where you always go, but they have closed meetings and they have open meetings. And I suppose a closed meeting could do a Zoom meeting because those people are used to being with each other all the time. Thus, it stays anonymous. An open meeting, that would be a little trickier because usually you go to a location and you do sort of make a promise while you're there that it will be confidential. But anybody can show up any time. So I've not asked that question of anybody who would know.
Just wondering, because without that support, why?
Right, right. You are just more likely. It's one of those contributing factors that make it more likely that you would relapse, certainly.
Yeah.
I would think so.
Okay. All right. Okay. Anything
Thank
else
you.
For Denise Denton from YSS? Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Okay, Denise?
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So we're at the end of our meeting, so now comments. Are there any staff members on the phone who wish to make a comment?
No.
Hearing none. Louisa, do you have a comment for us?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Okay. John, do you have a comment?
No.
Okay.
No, you're not.
Okay, no, I don't. Okay, Mark?
No, I don't.
Okay, Lisa?
No, I don't.
Okay, and the only thing that I have to say is that for our special meeting, I'm going to propose that we do it on June 8th. That's a Monday. And the reason I would like to do it at that time, if no one has objections, is because I'm working late the whole rest of the week. So if we have our meetings after I'm done with work, we might not be getting started till 7 o'clock at night. So we can actually do a meeting at about 6, if you want to, on Monday, June 8th, or we can even do it a little bit earlier, like at about 5 o'clock.
6 o'clock would really work well for me.
6? Okay, we'll go with 6, okay? So, Stephanie, could we make sure that meeting gets put on, get an agenda, and we can always email each other later, okay?
Yes, we'll do that. I'll make arrangements.
Okay. So I would like to accept a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Second.
Okay. And with no objections, I call this meeting adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone, for your patience, your insight, and thanks for all our presenters, okay? All right. Okay. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Good night.